All right, welcome back to another episode of Mary and Andy Geek Out.
I'm Mary, he's Andy.
It'll never get old. Okay, so right now we are beginning to cover... Let me try that again.
We're on to season three!
Yes, we are beginning season three of Teen Titans, covering episodes 1, 2, and 3. Episode 1 is Deception. Basically, Cyborg infiltrates the Hive Academy, where he meets his basically antagonist for the season, Brother Blood, and escapes and destroys the Academy in the process.
And we get to see a bunch of teen villains, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2 is X, where Red X makes a return, but it's not Robin. And he is a thief, cat burglar, maybe with a heart of gold?
Yes. And then in the episode 3 is Betrothed. Basically, Starfire gets forced to marry an alien overlord to save her species.
But it turns out it's a ruse. I think that's oversimplifying it.
Yeah, I know.
Because she was fully willing to marry. She was not forced.
It's kind of forced.
I mean, it was an aspect of her culture she did not have an issue with until her husband turned out to be a gross, ugly alien.
Yes. Which we'll get to in a moment. In the meanwhile, so this is Cyborg season. And the show doesn't waste any time.
But then we get two more episodes where it's not Cyborg.
Right, but they kind of like, okay, this is Cyborg season, episode 1, here we go.
It's time to shine.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's really interesting because we've dealt with Cyborg in a, basically like 2 episodes before where he's dealing with, you know, his humanity or maybe lack of humanity.
Which is almost always the theme for his centric episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the one about his car.
Yeah, well... His car is his baby. I had to look it up, too. And we didn't get Tara's first appearance until episode 3, which is interesting. Episode 1 of season 2 is How Long is Forever, which is the future episode.
Dang, that's a hardcore way to start, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, no, because Cyborg dealt with his humanity when he fought Atlas, the big giant robot. And again, when he was...
that robot dude.
Fix it, yep.
Yeah.
But here, he actually, for once, talked more about his past as an actual, just regular human before his accident. He even said he was gonna... He didn't finish high school because of his accident.
Oh, yeah. Like, very grounded and human, really.
Mm-hmm.
He
looks really good, too, in his hologram form for him looking human.
Yes. Do we want to go through scene by scene?
Yeah, we can do whatever. If you have something in mind, go for it.
Because we start with Hive Heist, only there's 3 of them. Actually, I don't think they start calling themselves the High Five till later.
Till later, yeah.
So it's Jinx, Mammoth, and Gizmo.
Yeah, the big 3.
Yes. And Gizmo sounds like he calls them Slut Crunchers.
Yeah, we replayed that scene a few times.
The DVD does not have English subtitles, but if we would like to understand what they're saying in Portuguese, we're all set.
Yeah, the port has Portuguese subtitles, which is probably one of the most random subtitles.
Early subtitles, just early DVDs weren't really thinking about accessibility.
No, early DVDs were a wild west world of like any... Well, I guess they still are, but it's like anything goes in this.
There wasn't a standardization.
But it sounds like Gizmo said the word slut twice in this episode.
It might have been slug, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're stealing gold bars, which pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
The intro music's really awesome in this. It's a pretty good fight scene.
Yeah.
Didn't have much to say about this, although I think they kind of upped Jinx's creepiness. I'm going to keep an eye on that because, like, her slit pupils just seemed way more animal in this. And I feel like when they try to make her more, sympathetic. Her eyes are less creepy.
Ah, interesting.
But like I said, I'm going to keep an eye on it.
She is portrayed the most sympathetic of the three in this episode due to her bonding with Cyborg.
Yes, although that doesn't get taken very far either.
Not too far, no.
That she seems the most friendly with him in the...
Which you think you would, they would kind of lean on a little bit more.
So anyway, they decide they need to know what the what these kids are doing and what is being planned.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what prompts that.
I do forget what prompts that, too. I think, they know there's the Hive Academy,
yeah.
And they know that they're planning something. They just don't know what. Oh, because the tracer is on
Gizmo, and
they follow him back to the Hive Academy, which is what prompts Cyborg to put on his hologram to go infiltrate the Academy.
Yes. Beast Boy initially thinks he's the one who's going to infiltrate because he can shapeshift,
mm-hmm.
But that's obviously...
Raven calls him out on it, too, Green Mongoose is going to be great for... blending in.
But what I like about it is Starfire is just sort of in the background and she's delighted by all his shape-shifting.
Yeah.
And speaking of Starfire, so she's the one that notices that Cyborg's having issues seeing how he would have looked if he hadn't become a cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
With the holographic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one to come in and try to comfort him on the subject.
Right.
And it's interesting because, he's the one she talks to during the racism episode where she gets racismed against.
What is that episode?
It's some alien guy helps them and he keeps discriminating against Starfire and calling her slurs.
Right. We haven't seen that episode.
No.
Yeah, okay.
But it's kind of interesting that they, I guess it's repaying the favor because they don't really mesh as outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just Starfire is so empathetic, she's the one that goes to him.
Yeah. This is kind of like, we haven't had a Cyborg-Starfire together episode. So this is only the barest of bare interactions that they have, which is too bad.
Oh, and this is after what really hurts Cyborg is Robin's like, wow, you look normal that way.
Yeah. And Cyborg's like,
Yes.
Robin's not the most
diplomatic,
yes, of the Titans. I mean, none of them really are.
Yeah,
I guess Robin should have picked up on that, but
yeah, well, he's the normal kid.
Yeah,
he gets cool. He learns to fight cool, and that's his power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, it's decided that Cyborg's going to be the one, and we don't even show how he's like. How he infiltrates in the first place. He's just, a student, and
yeah.
It's cool.
Well, Brother Blood's, when we do see him, who's voiced by John DiMaggio, calls him out, on him infiltrating the building and making a mockery of his students and his robots, and then Brother Blood, kind of drops the act, and then admits, he's impressed by Cyborg. So I guess that's one way you can get into the school is just by...
I just want to see, Raven trying to forge documents. That's all I ask.
Speaking of, no, not really. But I did you notice the there are a lot of, I think the favorite part about this episode for me is seeing all the students in the background.
Yes, the first scene that takes place in the Hive Academy is the cafeteria with all the students.
And so you see a lot of students that some come back later on, like Seymour.
It has voiced characters, yeah. Seymour and Billy Numerous are... the notable ones, and Bumblebee.
Bumblebee makes even the barest, she makes only one brief cameo.
Yes.
Other the villains that we see later on get more screen time. I mean, no speaking, but more screen time than her. But it was nice to see her, and I actually thought this is going to be the episode where she reveals herself. I guess that's later on.
Yes, I thought so too. I still think it's funny that, she didn't do a disguise even when she joined the High Five, which implies that her superhero persona was initially her disguise. She's like, I'm going to infiltrate the Hive as a bee.
As a bee.
Maybe she thought everyone dressed that way.
There's also these two students that look like ripoffs of Hot Girl and Batman.
Yes, I'm sure they're established characters, but they never get a bigger role in the series, so... But they do have, like, a cute moment when the whole academy is, like, collapsing or exploding or whatever evil institutions do when you've defeated the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And, everything's rumbling and the hot girl just sort of walks up to this bat guy and they teleport away.
They teleport away, yeah.
She holds on to him and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like they were hoping they'd set up a later episode with those two, maybe.
They did leave a lot of, like, breadcrumbs to come back to in case they want to revisit them.
Which... Remember, when you're writing stuff, just write a whole bunch of random scenes that don't go anywhere in case you actually want to take them somewhere later. You don't know. So, they have, like, the Hive 5 danger room, which is initially where Cyborg as Stone, a guy who can turn his body into rocks, which is very clever.
Yeah.
Shows off his prowess and impresses Brother Blood, gets his attention. But this room is a honeycomb.
There's a lot of honey.
Yes, because it's the hive. Yeah. But the thing is, that's the only thing that has that theme. You see, like, all the minions around, and they look like, you said, knockoff ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's wearing bee costumes. You think Bumblebee felt dumb when she came in?
Either that or she's deliberately playing it up to, like...
I mean, she got bee wings. I think that's her power, isn't it?
She's got bee wings. Doesn't she have little blasters?
She could have been a dragonfly.
Yeah.
I was impressed. Like, yeah, you called yourself the Hive. You gave yourself a theme. You went with it, but you didn't really.
Yeah.
You just did the bright yellow danger room.
Yeah, even Brother Blood himself doesn't have, like, any kind of notable bee theme to him.
Yeah.
Which, let's talk about him, if you want, if it's all right.
Yeah, no, we should.
Because he actually sets up a really good character link with Cyborg, because he says that he can make him, I don't know, like, he says, like, I can make you feel human or make you human again, which is something that Cyborg was lamenting about earlier.
Brother Blood has manipulation powers.
Mm-hmm. Mind manipulation, yeah. In fact, it's kind of established through Glowing of Red Eye students that he can control the power minds of a lot of students in general.
Which is funny because he doesn't even really need to do it. He's just kind of flexing as far as I can tell.
Yeah, right.
Or maybe he's just super uncharismatic or super insecure.
Right. I feel like it's like, this is the headmaster.
Oh, also it's...
Kids seem into it, so why do you bother brainwashing them?
Yes. Also, it's John DiMaggio's Dr. Draken voice.
Mm-hmm. Only with much less of the hamminess to it.
Yeah, except for a few times where he'll, like, do a speech and then repeat a word.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll tremble before us. Tremble!
Tremble! This episode also showed Cyborg making a copy of himself.
Oh, yeah.
Which Beast Boy... controlled for most of the episode. Not very well, but he did. And there's a really good scene where it's just the four Teen Titans. Sans Cyborg fighting against Cyborg and Mammoth, Jinx. Gizmo, and Jinx. So it's like four against four, but with the Cyborg robot. And then there's a scene where it's basically Cyborg beating the crap out of his robotic self. Which is kind of distressing when you think about it. Because he's just basically pounding his robotic face so hard in, it just breaks.
Yes. He had some issues to work out.
Mm-hmm.
This was after we're, like, supposed to believe that Cyborg betrayed them, either through mind manipulation or being offered something he really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Or both.
And then Cyborg...
That was a little iffy, honestly.
And then Cyborg reveals that his mechanical side of his brain...
But also, back to the fight, he punched himself and destroyed his hologram.
Oh, yeah, he did destroy his hologram. Because his hologram's on his rings.
Yes.
On his ring finger, excuse me. Like, he wears them as rings. And I'm thinking, like, your power is punching. You're Stone. You punch things, and you're built as a tank. I'm just...
Oh, why would you put the thing you don't want to break on the thing you do with fighting?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why don't you put it on, I don't know.
Earrings.
Like earrings, neck brace, I don't know. Something where it's not going to be hitting a lot of things. It is just don't know. It was interesting to me. But then Cyborg revealed after the fight that he wasn't being mind controlled because his mechanical side of his head could resist the mind control.
Yes. And then as the facility is being destroyed, Jinx is like, you really could have been one of us.
And Cyborg's like, nope. Which is interesting because I think in the Fix-It episode, his human side was what helped him win against Fix-It. And in this episode, it was his mechanical side.
You don't remember the follow-up episode to this one, do you?
No. To the Brother Blood episode?
Yes.
I do not remember the follow-up episode to this. In fact, I don't really much remember anything at all in Season 3. I only remember for Brother Blood this episode and vaguely the last episode. But that's about it.
Okay.
Brother Blood does not strike me as a too memorable villain.
He's not really, but his main thing is his connection to Cyborg, which I do appreciate in a villain. I like when their whole thing is a specific character, because it gives the character a spotlight, which is always nice in these team shows.
So, like Slade and Robin.
Yeah, but Robin was always going to be a main character, so that doesn't count.
That's too bad. Yes, it is. It is. You're right, though, in a way, because we had Robin in Season 1. Tarot is a weird thing for Season 2. And now we're focusing on other team members for their moment to shine.
Yes.
But I think they were trying to find a way to replace Slade. And there's no replacing Slade.
No. Not with John DiMaggio. You can't replace Ron Perlman with John DiMaggio.
Oh, man. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yes. We haven't discussed the more comedic moments of this, like the hazing or the Cyborg robot so much.
Right, the Cyborg robot just mainly shouts booyah.
Yes, okay, there's not much to say about the Cyborg robot. I do feel like that is a good setup for later stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it paying off, but we just watched the Superman versus the Elite, and in that one he has a bunch of super robots that pay off later, and I'm like, we can do that with Cyborg's bot.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think
Right. Beast Boy was really callous in this episode, because there's multiple scenes where people are worried about Cyborg, and it's like, he might be dead, and Beast Boy's like, who cares? And
we got the robot!
Yeah, and they all glare at him. Like, they're all pissed at Beast Boy. Like, yeah, I think, like, last season kind of clinched it. Beast Boy's strength is not empathy.
Yep.
Yes, now that's what I'm...
Zip it, Grapple Brain.
You, Stone, sneaking into my school, destroying my drones, making my top students look like amateur pickpockets. You must think you're very clever, but you're not clever. You're brilliant. Well done, Mr. Stone. Well done.
Phew.
I see a bright future for you.
Thanks.
Great score you have here, Mr. Blood. Brother Blood, at your service.
All right, so let's talk about Episode 2, X.
This is the episode that brings back Red X, but not as Robin, because I guess they like the design.
Yeah. Well, very good design overall, and really cool powers with the gadgets and the whole X theme and everything.
And the whole thing's designed to take out the Teen Titans specifically and non-lethally.
Hmm, yeah, you're right.
This is one of the few episodes... Actually, I don't know how many episodes with a cold open. Mm-hmm. And it starts kind of dramatically. Robin's doing his voiceover, and the Titans are quietly following this some villain.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of sneaking by him, and weirdly, like, for all the serious tone, they keep having Beast Boy goof, like he can't keep up or
right
doesn't make it in time.
They have to show that they're still being lighthearted.
I guess so, because, like, their more serious episodes are plotty, and while this one is a more dramatic episode, it's also not high stakes.
Right.
Except for when that one guy's trying to annihilate the entire city.
Yes.
We'll get to him.
But also, Robin's talking about the line, the blurred line between being good and being evil. It's very dramatic. It's very, like, something out of a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yes. Especially since he's the one who essentially created this villain.
Yes.
By creating the suit and keeping it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Batman gets to keep his suits.
Mm-hmm. So Robin learns from the best, really. So really it's Batman's fault.
Although Batman does not power his suits with highly volatile compounds.
No. In this case, Zenothium.
Yes.
Which is another one of those made-up chemicals. Phlebotinum. Yeah, or elements that doesn't actually exist.
But before we find out about that, we get our fight with Red X, where he handily takes on the entire team, using all the gadgets Robin designed to take on the entire team.
Mm-hmm.
Starfire does remember to use her eye beams right after Red X tries to flirt with her.
Yes, which is great. She's used them more often. We'll get to see them again in the following episode, too, which is great.
They remembered she had them. In this case, it's also sort of showing his parallel to Robin. Like, he's interested in Starfire.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he's voiced by the same voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so we have no hints as to who he could be.
Right.
Unless you think he's a clone, but that's boring. You're boring.
Right. Do we want to talk about who we think he is, or?
I don't think that's really interesting.
Well, I will say that there is that humorous scene with Beast Boys board, whiteboard, or whatever, where it's all the theories of who Red X it could be, and it's everything from, like, alternate dimension Robin, Larry as Robin, clone.
He's wearing a stormtrooper armor in that drawing.
Yeah, and then they have Jason Todd, and it's basically a way for the creators to tease, like, who could this be, and could be Jason Todd. And a lot of people like to think it's Jason Todd, but I found in a video online, Cartoon Conspiracies, which seems to think otherwise.
If you're going to plug it, is that the name of the YouTube site?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the series that they do. It's from Federator. That's okay. The YouTube channel. So I think overall, it's not too important of his identity, per se.
No. I think in this, he kind of... Well, he works just sort of as a dark Robin, not evil Robin, but I mean, it's Robin confronting his own mistakes.
Right.
Like, literally. Also, this episode's soundtrack kind of goes for a Western thing. There's a sort of Spanish guitar in the background of most of the action scenes, which was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not entirely. It's hard to find trivia for TV from this time because not everybody was doing commentary for every DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be great, though?
I know, right? Get to see all the Jackie Chan commentaries. That'd be funny. That'd be pretty great. I'd probably watch one or two. Can't have the Simpsons commentary where they have every single episode. But yes, there are quite a few Western.
See, why not?
Yes, I know, right? They have a lot of Western references. They have, like, a flying dove, for instance, when Red X and Robin team up.
Yes. There is another villain in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you wanted to talk about something.
Go for it.
Okay, so when Robin created his suit, it was powered by Zenothium, which Cyborg recognizes as incredibly stupid and irresponsible. So where does one get stupid, irresponsible materials but from another villain?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're introduced to Professor Chang. I don't really know what his deal is in the comics, but he's voiced by the guy who seems to have done all the Chinese men in all the cartoons for a while.
Yeah, so he's I mean, I just said Jackie Chan, but he voices Dao Long Wong, mm-hmm. who was a major antagonist in Season 3.
And I think he's the Emperor's advisor in Mulan. We should probably look his name up.
I can't remember. But I believe he also voices someone from Avatar The Last Airbender as well.
Seems likely.
But he has a whole history of repeatedly voicing these Asian characters, usually in a more malicious, villainous role. I remember now, he voices, surprisingly, not a quote-unquote bad guy, per se, but a he voices one of the airbenders who kind of voices concern about Aang being an avatar and being babied. So that was interesting. But anyway.
Could you look it up? It feels bad to talk about this guy and not actually have his name.
So we looked it up, and the voice actor for Professor Chang is James Hong, who voiced quite a few other characters as well, including the ones that we just mentioned.
And he's 90 what now?
He's 91 years old.
And still kicking.
Yeah, and was an actor in quite a few movies, including Airplane, which I did not know about, which is pretty cool. Among other films as well, including Chinatown, Blade Runner, and Big Trouble in Little China. So he's had quite a filmography under his belt.
That's a token Chinese guy by the sound of it.
Yes.
Well, a Chinese guy, anyway.
Buildings, neighborhoods, lives. Countless targets just waiting to be disintegrated. Tell me, pretty girl, have you ever seen something ripped apart? Molecule by molecule is breathtaking.
You are a bad man!
Oh? If you think I'm bad now, you're going to be really impressed once I finish with your city and move on to you.
So he has quite a few voices under his belt. And this is the first time that we're seeing Professor Chang here as well.
Yes. Not the first time Robin's seen him.
Yeah.
But he has way more presence than Brother Blood, in my opinion. Especially when he decides to go on full-on supervillain rather than just dealer.
Yeah, he has like a weaselly kind of, not charm, but personality to him.
I wouldn't say weaselly. He does the creepy thing where he, like, I wouldn't call it flirty, but kind of, like, calls Starfire pretty, and it's kind of icky, but, what really adds to the atmosphere of him is he's in an abandoned observatory, and it's cold, possibly because he's keeping it that way, so every time people talk, you can see their breath.
Yeah, it's really good effect.
Yeah, and so when he's doing his speech, he's talking about he's just talking sort of dispassionately about atomizing the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really chilling.
Yeah, and it really heightens because he's wearing like a sterile, not even like a lab coat, it's like a weird kind of coat with a hat, and then he has these like goggles over his face and everything.
And a tube in his nose.
And a tube in his nose, yeah. They really kind of went out and about making him like a creepy kind of design to him, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of his few appearances on the show. I think the next time we see him again is in season 5.
Yeah, I don't remember him at all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember him from this episode. I didn't remember the plot of this episode. I just know X shows up.
You know what I totally forgot? Silky.
Oh, yeah. This is, was it that the previous episode?
It was this episode.
Okay, this episode is Silky's first appearance?
Yeah.
There it is. There it is with an exclamation mark.
Because Beast Boy shows his chalkboard, and then Raven does a severe flip on it with her mind powers, which launches Beast Boy into the kitchen. He hits the ground, stuff goes flying, and one of the stuff that goes flying is Silky, who lands on the counter and just crawls away. And Starfire notices Silky and seems amused by it. and this is like way before I looked, and the Silky episode's coming up later this season, but that's like in episode 9. But Beast Boy has held on to Silky for quite a while, it seems like.
I told you it came from that episode.
Mm-hmm.
From the Date with Destiny episode, I mean.
Yes.
Must be real confusing for anybody else who was watching closely.
Yeah. I think for, like, if they were watching closely, it might have been shown as, like, a gag.
Yeah.
As, like, a one-off gag. Of, like, this strange creature is living in their tower.
Yes.
But for eagle-eyed fans, it's like, wow, this was referenced really early. Kind of like Bumblebee, now that I think about it.
Yeah. I guess by season three, they're like, okay, we really can establish things now.
Mm-hmm.
We can really set up our continuity because we're safe and don't think we're going to be canceled any second now.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
So, yeah, the simple of it is Robin finds out where there's more Zenophium so he can catch Red X. There's a time where the Teen Titans split up so they're alone, which they should know better by now because every time they get beaten really bad, it's because they've been split up.
Right.
I guess that's why they start recruiting more Titans later.
Yeah.
But
they don't get captured by Red X. They get captured by Professor Chang and his men.
I mean, still.
But it's made,
my point still stands.
Oh, no, I'm agreeing with your point, but I'm saying it's made to look like that Red X was the one to capture them, I think initially.
Yes, but anyway, Cyborg gets kidnapped first, and I just want to say, because he's looking around some random docks, I don't know why, but he's got a flashlight. And my thing is, like, why doesn't he have, like, night vision or something? He's part robot. Why is he using a flashlight?
Hmm. That's a good point.
Or infrared or something.
Oh, yeah. I feel like we should probably have to keep an eye on
I guess because night vision makes the character look too creepy.
Yeah. We'll have to keep an eye on it later to see if he has any kind of special vision.
Yes. Like, if you're giving yourself a robot eye, it better be, you know, more than an eye.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Zenophium gets taken by Chang because, you know, extremely powerful, volatile material.
Mm-hmm.
And Red X gets beaten. Robin gives him, like, a little speech, like, this is your fault that he got this in the first place, so you should help. And Red X is like, no, being a good guy is dumb. And Robin leaves. And Robin goes to fight Chang, and all his teammates are kidnapped, and then Red X shows up, and they team up.
Yes.
And it's not as cool as the initial fight, I don't think. I don't remember it as well. The music's always awesome.
The music's really good. And then the episode ends with them freeing the Titans, of course. Professor Chang basically takes a telescope and transforms it into a huge death ray.
That'd be easy.
And then
lasers are just like optics, right? And you got a bunch of mirrors in a telescope.
And then the Teen Titans mess everything up, and then the telescope turns on and basically slices the observatory in half. And Red X basically escapes, but they're not able to find him afterwards.
Yes. And Robin goes back to narrating.
Yes.
There was something that made me wonder. Robin, like, after he beats Red X, he's got him in, like, a little impromptu prison.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to go save the city, so he's like, I'll be back to take you to jail. And I'm like, aren't the cops supposed to do that? Should you just call them? Do the cops not exist in this town?
They definitely exist, because they took away Chang and his men. And they put back the Zenothium, too. Which they had, like...
Wait, the Titans put the Zenothium back, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's personally.
Funny. But it's funny, because, like, the room where it has all the Zenothium, it's, like, these huge locked containers. Mm-hmm. But then there's, like, this one Zenothium rod that seems to be hovering in a beam of light. And it's, like, what's special about this one when there's all these other Zenothium?
There's probably, like, identical rooms next door. So if you accidentally go in this one, it's like, oh, this is the wrong room. It's the Zenothium room.
The Zenothium room. Man, I cannot pronounce that word. They made that word as difficult to pronounce as possible.
Yeah. I wonder about the etymology of it. I had assumed it was, like, xenomorph, like alien.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it might be something along that,
It's obviously spelled with an X, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I agree. No way this is spelled with a Z.
Oh, yeah. Also, a big chunk of the tower gets taken off.
Yeah, I noticed that, because it basically takes off the middle top part of the tower.
Yes.
Which I look at it and I think this is not structurally sound, because the two, I guess the wings of the T,
mm-hmm.
Of the giant tower, those should like fall off easily. It's like it's hanging on by like a bare like sliver of the T itself.
Yeah. My first thought was just whose room got destroyed just then.
Oh my god. Yeah, you're right.
I did not understand the layout of that building.
No, it just like totally zoomed. I was like, that's gotta be like either their main room, they're like, it's like in the middle of the T. That's probably where like their big playroom is, or I don't know. It feels like something important. They kind of glanced over it, which bothers me a little.
Yes.
Which, you know, I never really discussed it before, but I want to do a quick aside. When I was growing up, I thought that their big screen room with the kitchen and you can play video games in the screen room was like the coolest thing ever growing up. I was like, yeah, great view of the sea and of the city. Big, huge, theater-sized screen. It seems an awesome room to be in.
Yeah. Do you wonder how they do meals? Like, is it the standard roommate situation?
Oh my god, you're right. Like, who do they...
Do they do a rotation?
Do they buy the meals?
Like, somebody's stuck in the fridge. Alfred sneaks in every now and then.
Oh my god. I never thought about that before.
Yeah, well, it's not a show made for overthinking, but...
No. It's interesting. I think if I want to say one more thing, it's just like how X is such this big mystery. Red X is this big mystery around him.
Yes.
And yet it's one of those mysteries that we never get resolved.
Extra funny because we don't care about anybody else's alias, alter ego, or identity.
Yeah, I think what...
I mean, it's because it's Robin's suit and it was Robin before we knew the identity this time. But...
And I think a lot of people are just interested in it because it's someone that was able to sneak in and steal.
Yeah, that seemed like kind of a big deal that they sort of glanced over, that he somehow got into Titan's Tower, into Robin's personal bedroom. Maybe it was during, like, Terra.
Yeah.
And they were all distracted and had their defenses taken down anyway.
I could see that.
Yeah, actually, that's a good explanation.
Good work, thief.
It's like, oh boy, the city's being taken over by a tiny girl. Time to go rob the Titans.
Excellent.
Okay.
So, last episode then. Betrothed.
Betrothed. It's a Starfire episode. We finally get to see what, is it Tamarania?
Yep.
Tamarania looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big desert with a pink sky.
Yeah, they're really trying to make it as alien-looking as possible.
I don't know about that. They did a pretty good job.
Maybe I should rephrase that. I think they used the colors as best as they could, too.
Well, in the more dramatic episodes, the sky on Earth is always a crazy color. When Slade's taken over, it was orange. Before that, I think it was fuchsia.
I've noticed this episode and the X episode, they've really seemed to push my kind of go more out there in terms of color and set design. Like, they really seem to focus on those kind of darker colors and those high visual contrasts as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think now that they've had either a higher budget or that they've proven themselves, that they probably were able to experiment and kind of go and push themselves a little further in that direction.
So the episode starts with Starfire packing all of her stuff.
Yes.
Just all of it. And she's acting like it's no big deal, but I think she is pretending for the entire episode that it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's when she drops that she has been called back to her home to get married, as was always intended for her. So then they blast off in an extremely toyetic ship, the Titans spaceship / submarine / probably whatever else they want, which is an ugly orange and splits into individual pieces for each Titan.
Yeah.
So they all have to learn how to pilot that thing in the first place, which I want to see that episode.
Yeah, it would actually have been really cool if they fought like an alien creature or whatever, or like an invading alien spaceship, and then they're like, what if we take the submarine and turn it into a spaceship? And Raven would be like, that's a really terrible idea. And then they do it anyway. I can totally imagine them doing that.
Like, what's interesting is you assume that Cyborg made it because Cyborg makes all the mechanical stuff, but it's orange.
Yeah.
Like, was orange just the color that I can't imagine everybody agreeing on it, but I assume it's, like, the only color nobody wanted.
Right. Or, like, maybe it was just the only paint they had left.
We used all the blue on my T-car, sorry.
We just have the orange left. So they go to the planet.
Yes.
And then there's a scene where Beast Boy meets one of the alien guard dogs, I guess. Yes. And he's like, kind of like, oh, he's frightened by them.
Yes, but first he's like, cool, alien animals.
Yeah. So he's kind of intrigued by them. And then when they're kind of busting out of alien jail, he turns himself into one of those alien creatures, which Cyborg... He says something like, I didn't know you could do that.
And he was like, how did you know that would work?
And Beast Boy's like, I just did. And I thought that's pretty clever. I really like it that he himself is also finding, he's not static in his powers. He's finding other ways that he can expand and
yes.
get creative. Which really, a lot of people ask the question, can Beast Boy turn into a Tamaranian?
That brings up a weird question, what counts as an animal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's never tried to turn into any of the other aliens they've encountered.
Mm-hmm.
Can he turn into a god? Is a god a species?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because it also expands on the aliens themselves, because besides Blackfire, we don't see any of the other Tamaranians fly.
Yeah. It's maybe that's only royalty.
Yeah.
Maybe nobody else flies out of respect. Like, mm-hmm. you can't be higher than the royal family. Anyway, the first Tamaranian we meet when we actually arrive on the planet is this big, buff, sort of Viking aesthetic looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
Only in the traditional Tamaranian purple that everybody wears. And he's supposed to look imposing, but he immediately starts tickling Starfire, and it's revealed that he was her nanny growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the role of her parents in this.
Yeah.
There is no mention of what happened to her parents. We assume they died.
Yeah. There are so many unanswered questions that I feel like could have been tied up a little bit more neatly in this episode. And that's one of them. Because Starfire is not confused or surprised that she's a princess. In fact, it seems like she's always known this. And how can you be a princess but have royalty parents? And now Blackfire is basically the emperor of her planet. So she sounds like she just straight up murdered her parents for...
Yes. Starfire says, I am second in line for the throne.
Yeah.
Implying Blackfire was first in line even though she was in jail.
Right.
And it's like, so what happened to the people on the throne?
I know. So that's the first big question. So Blackfire probably killed her parents. So both regicide and patricide. Patricide.
Matricide.
Yep. And matricide, yep.
Is there one for both parents or is it just patricide and matricide?
I think, we'll just say it that for now. The next unanswered question I have is, are they speaking their alien language and it's being translated?
Okay, so when we first meet the nanny,
mm-hmm.
he's speaking Tamaranian. Right. Starfire's speaking Tamaranian to him. And then Beast Boy jokes about, have you was your nanny? And he starts speaking English.
Right.
And we will know in a later episode that Tamaranians have the power to kiss a person to learn their language.
Yes.
And that's another one, like, would that work on animals? Or do you have to have a language? I mean...
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the nanny, more than likely, kissed someone that could speak...
An English speaker.
An English speaker.
Maybe tickling an English speaker works, too.
Maybe, if I were to reason it, maybe he kissed Starfire if she was, like, visiting her planet.
Like a little smooch on the cheek.
Yes. Like
although kisses are supposedly not meaningful to them.
Yes.
We shouldn't get too lost in this one or we'll be here forever, but...
Is it wrong for me to bring up about Starfire's way of how she uses
words?
Yes,
vocal patterns.
Vocal patterns?
Yeah.
Something that she has, but her sister and her nanny don't have.
Yes.
I mean, she does have, like, a formal way of speaking.
I did have two ideas on that, which is, one, Starfire might be bad at using that power.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the idea that she does it on purpose so people continue to underestimate her, which doesn't seem Starfire-y, but that's what she wants us to think.
That's what she wants us to think. She's been Columbo-ing it the whole time.
And my favorite is just because Robin was so like, whoa, a girl's kissing me, his brain malfunctioned and Starfire couldn't hear language like properly.
That's a good one.
Headbone Ruthaga for King!
Unless they tickle people to death here, I think you can chill.
Friends, I wish you to meet my Knorfka, Galfor. He raised me from the time I was very small.
You mean this dude's your nanny?
You find that amusing, little one?
Speaking of Robin, he was super salty in this episode.
Robin's jealousy is a lot funnier than Starfire's jealousy.
Yeah. It's funny because it's almost bordering on to... I haven't seen
it. And also, yet. Really, Robin's is better placed than Starfire's.
Yeah.
Robin was only fake dating that girl that he was obviously the whole time really mad about dating.
Right, yeah. That's right, Starfire was pretty jealous about that.
Starfire has been acting like nothing's wrong.
Yeah.
In this episode.
And Robin's pretty... So this is kind of understandable for Robin's point of view because she's getting married and potentially leaving them, like, forever.
Yes.
Okay. I can buy that.
To some guy nobody met.
Did you write down his name?
It's like... Glurtle Sklutch?
Yeah. I'm not going to say that, but you got it. It sounds like a Rick and Morty...
He looks like a Rick and Morty thing.
Yeah.
A little less detailed, but... So, as we mentioned, Blackfire has ascended the throne and is marrying her sister off in an obvious act of petty vengeance to Glurtle Sklutch, who is just a green blob with a bunch of sort of tentacle mouths. Glurtle Sklutch, we learned from the credits, is spelled GLGRDSKLECHHH.
It's a wonderful name.
Yes.
And it was under the pretenses that it was his invasion army that's forcing Tamarania to bow to his will. And so that's why...
And the invasion is very real because the Titans ran into it while on the way to the planet.
But then it was revealed that all the spaceships were controlled by, like, remote controlled.
Yes.
Pretty much. And Blackfire basically organized the whole thing.
Yes, because what she really wanted to do was trade her sister for a power gem.
Which Glurtle Sklutch had on hand for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, he had it on hand as the deal. I'm more wondering why he wanted to marry a Tamaranian princess. Maybe he's just like... I don't know.
I'm also kind of surprised that Blackfire kind of kept her under the deal and didn't just straight up steal it from him in the first place.
Well, I think she saw an opportunity to humiliate her sister.
That is true.
Hell yeah.
Which, speaking of which, they did. They had like the big wedding scene. They're getting married. Robin finds out.
Glurtle Sklutch does not speak English.
Nope.
Which made me want Starfire to kiss him.
Yep.
So that she could learn the language.
Yep, I agree. She doesn't really seem to try to get to know him too well, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, well, she tries, and then her hand sticks to him, and then. Puts an end to things, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Glurtle Sklutch did nothing wrong.
Pretty much. He was just a guy that had a powerful gem on hand that found a
lucky
break.
He might have not even known what was going on most of the time. He was like, why is this
like
alien speaking an alien language at me?
Yes,
she likes my gem and she's going to have a party for me?
Yeah. Like a foreign dignitary just being like... Like, just totally lost on what's going on. Anyway, so Robin reveals to Starfire that the whole thing was faked and it was a setup. And Starfire gets angry at her sister. And then they fight.
And what this is another one with the I-beams.
Uh-huh.
Where I think they actually used it really well, because it's like Starfire's been through puberty since they last fought.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's more powerful, because Blackfire's like, you can't beat me, I got this powerful gem. And she's like, well, I got stronger since I last saw you, so nyeh.
Yeah, because the predator that feeds on Tamaradian cocoons said that Starfire's was extra special. And Blackfire, I think...
Did not do the cocoon thing.
Because she only got, like, what? Like, it was something...
She went purple for...
Yeah, like a weekend or something like that.
Yes.
And that was it, as compared to, like, Starfire's, like, crazy transformation. So, I really like that, to show that Starfire got, like, a level up, that she was stronger.
Oh, so this episode is pretty heavy on the extras, because they wanted to show the Tamaranian locale.
Yeah.
Like, Teen Titans in general isn't too good with background characters.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have a lot of background Tamaranians.
Yep.
And most of them were red-haired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in fact, it was basically all red hair for a while, and I was like, what's with Blackfire then? And then during the wedding scene, we finally saw some other colors, which kind of was like, okay, yes. So Blackfire is just very unusual then in this case, yes, but not unheard.
Yes.
Unheard of.
And all of them were wearing purple.
Yeah, it was very purple and orange, this episode. This episode was, like, purple, yes, and orange consistently.
There was... they do a lot of the alien stuff jokes, which kind of makes the stuff that isn't alien stand out more. Like, boy, this wedding ceremony sure is a lot like an Earth Christian ceremony. Only with the Empress. It looked like they were kind of going for a Viking thing. When they first arrive, there's a banquet.
Yeah.
And...
Huge goblets that they can't lift.
Huge goblets, most of them can't lift.
Yeah.
Raven has no issues. Beast Boy doesn't know if anything's vegetarian, and that's a good gag.
And he can't pee.
Yeah, which, I think he wasn't trying hard enough. I think Beast Boy must be pee shy.
Yeah, I guess so, because he...
Because none of the other Titans had this issue. And they actually ate. Beast Boy didn't eat.
Yeah.
Also, Cyborg was very happy with the alien food, and I'm like, hell yeah, Cyborg.
Yeah, Cyborg was pretty open for it.
Yes. Cyborg likes food. That's a quality I can admire.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a character who's, you know, it's not their only character trait.
No, like, it's nice to see the later seasons are beginning to show different facets of their personality, with Cyborg being, like, not only is he having this human versus machine debate, but he also is a big mechanic. He also likes eating and video games. And so there's a lot of big personality quirks and traits to him that I like. He's very fleshed out.
Yes. Also, Beast Boy is the only one that seems to have issues with alien stuff at all. Like, he gets eaten by a thing he thought was a chair.
Yeah.
He won't eat the food. He can't find a bathroom. If everyone can fly, maybe they just go out into the desert.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, why couldn't he just turn into, like, an eagle or whatever and just fly away and just
do his business? Yeah, like, for a guy who can turn into an animal, he has a lot of issues figuring out how to use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he was stuck because Starfire was in the bathroom too long.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all you gotta do is,
there's,
like,
a big fixation on him in bathrooms, you're right.
He is the comedic character.
Okay.
And it's, if you do it with girls, it seems perverted, and Robin's too serious, and Cyborg's a cyborg.
Yeah, so that leaves Beast Boy.
Yep. Actually, it'd be really funny with Robin.
Yeah. Gotta get out of my tights.
Yeah, just let, please, Starfire, get out of the bathroom. I've only got, like...
I can't hold my little Robin any longer.
Yeah, no. Okay,
Like I said, Robin's saltiness about this was really funny, to the point that it reminded me of Teen Titans Go as well.
Yes.
Just of how almost comedically love-struck or passionate he is about Starfire.
Yeah, he got some really funny animations in this, although none quite as funny as, like, Starfire's rage and...
Yeah. Sarah had some really good
reactions. Her mouth drops off and like returns as a horrible, like her face opens up. And
yes. Just,
that animation.
So good.
So good.
It is too bad that, like, for a show that has five characters in it, that we only have basically one ship that's only, like, it's basically confirmed, I guess. Like, it's, like, something that they push on a lot, but that's about it. Like, they have those moments of jealousy, but they don't really act on it too much, which is unfortunate.
Yes. Also, one little thing, when Robin's being like, this isn't right, and they don't actually know what the scheme yet, Raven's the one that's like, we should respect their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's cool, Raven. You don't come into an extremely alien culture and tell them what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, fortunately... Everything was wrong.
Everything was wrong.
And they didn't have to have an actual moral quandary. And yeah. That's... Thank goodness.
Thank God for that.
Yep. That
was about
up.
It from my end. Yeah. Overall, is I guess overall... I guess it's like a middle-of-the-road episode. You know, it's a good character episode. We got to see relationships between two characters, mainly Starfire and Robin.
Yeah, and a little background.
I got to see her home planet. So it's a lot of, like...
I do want to talk about Blackfire has been used rather boringly.
Yeah. I think this is the last time we get to see her.
Even though she does a whole you haven't seen the last of me, because Starfire banishes her and then makes the nanny the Emperor, I think.
Yeah. Which is so...
Yeah, I think, like, as soon as Starfire's back is turned, there's going to be a coup.
Yeah. I feel like if they ever did that hypothetical sixth season, of Teen Titans, the one that would focus on Starfire, it would more than likely have Blackfire as the main antagonist.
Maybe do something with her parents.
Yeah. And I feel like
Yeah, because Starfire was created for the Teen Titans, right?
I have no idea.
Like, Beast Boy came from Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. I think Cyborg was created for the Teen Titans, too.
Mm-hmm. And then he got an upgraded Justice League.
Yes.
But what I was going to say was that this show kind of came out a few years before Avatar The Last Airbender came out.
Which is, like, the ultimate in excellent, like, character development and study.
And there we also had an antagonistic sister named Azula,
who is an excellent character. Excellent not boring character. At all.
No, not at all. And I feel like if the writers maybe have held Blackfire's story arc with a little bit more care... We could have seen maybe why she is the way she is.
Oh.
Maybe Starfire was favored by her parents.
I was actually going to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need her character to be more in-depth. I want her just to be more, like, hilariously petty. Like, I feel like part of the reason she did the scheme the way she did is more for the drama than actual motivation.
Mm-hmm. She does like drama. She does seem to have, like, an air for it.
Yeah, like, she didn't have to do the whole wedding ceremony. She could have been like, okay, I'm the Emperor, you're married now, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Instead, she wanted to humiliate her sister in front of everyone.
Yes.
Which really kind of, like...
And I want it to lean into that. I want her to get, like, weirdly insulting to the individual Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And less more like, oh, dear sister, you can never beat me. I want her to be, like, use the relationship she had formed with the Titans before against them.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'd be a good whole team villain if they played the cards right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And it's too bad that we don't get the... I don't know.
We need more fully developed, either in character or in dialogue, female mm-hmm. villains.
we'll see Jinx again later.
Yeah, well.
And so
Jinx
and then,
is pretty basic too.
So for future like female Jinx. Villains, we got Jinx, and then we got Madame Rouge,
who I barely remember. Also,
yeah. And then there's Mother May I.
Now that's a memorable character.
That's a memorable character.
Hey, yeah, it is weird that I think we still have this problem, though a lot less than before, where a female villain has to have a reason to be female. So either because they're like a femme fatale, or in the case of Mother May I, a weird creepy grandma.
Right.
Rather than like have a character like Mumbo Jumbo, who also happens to be a woman, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to rack my brains of the show's villains. And I can't seem to recall. There's Kitty. I think that's her name, right? The daughter of Mothman.
She's the daughter of Mothman. She's great, but she's also got her character around being a girl. She's not a villain who happens to be a girl, which is what I'm trying to get at.
I know. I'm just trying to think of other...
Oh, other female villains?
Yeah.
Kitty is great. I like her a lot.
She is an entertaining
She's terrible.
Villain. She's terrible.
Her boyfriend has a spider for a head.
I love the boyfriend. Oh my god. That episode was so entertaining. I love that one a lot.
Yes.
Anyway.
Can you imagine if Control Freak was a lady?
That'd be hilarious. We should put a pin on this. Maybe we should, at the end, when we do like a kind of a look back, we can talk about which were our favorite villains and whatnot. So, that's something to keep in mind.
Okay.
But for now, let's wrap it up our episode. So, we like to do, like, our... Of the three episodes, which was our favorite and which was our least favorite. They're all very different in tone.
Yes.
One's like, a season starter. One is a gritty episode about redemption. And one is about... sister and dedication.
Well,
like family bonds, dedication.
I can easily say Betrothed ranks the least. And not because it was bad, just out of the three, it wasn't...
It was very...
It wasn't the most fun, it wasn't the most intriguing.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite of the three... I mean, it's... These three episodes were definitely middle of the road, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Of the three, though, I agree with you that the least one would probably be Betrothed. I could take it or leave it. Red X at least has some really cool style to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my favorite has to be the Cyborg episode.
Yes.
Which is called Deception. Because you get some really good character moments with the Cyborg. You get to see the inner workings of a villain academy, which is nice.
Yes, that would be a fun spinoff.
You get to see him being like holographic full human form and use his name Victor Stone.
It's very handsome.
Yes, very handsome. I think that would be my favorite of the three.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Red X, again, solid episode, and that soundtrack is awesome. Actually, the intro music in Deception was really good, but I can't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember it was like, whoa, this is cool. But yeah, Deception's my favorite. Like I said, Teen Titans is weak on background characters in general, so it's just nice seeing all those random kid villains. It has a lot of great setup. It's got... Yeah, it introduces some fun characters.
Yeah, and then get a little brief flash of Bumblebee.
And I always approve of Cyborg episodes. They always seem surprisingly well-written.
Yes, I agree. Alright, so I think that will conclude it for this season.
This episode.
We're going to be tackling Season 3, Episode 4, 5, and 6 next. Episode 4 is Crash. Episode 5 is Haunted. And Episode 6 is Spellbound.
Oh, wait. Crash is the one where they crash, right?
I have no idea. I don't recognize... any of these three, but based on title alone.
The last two sound like Raven episodes, but who knows?
I've
been fooled before.
Yeah. I think you're right that the Spellbound is a Raven episode. So we're going to find out. I'm going to be pleasantly surprised. I've been going into these kind of blind because I can't recognize them usually by title alone. Like, episode one was Deception.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and right after Terra is kind of hell of a name to start and, with.
But then you have episode 2, which was X. That's pretty...
I remember when we were confused by Fractured.
Yeah, and then... But episode 3 was Betrothed. So some of them are like, oh, that makes sense. And other ones are like, I guess. Anyway, once again, guys, thank you very much for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have anything you would like to comment on, maybe about Red X's identity or your feelings about how they use Blackfire, please feel free to comment on the episode itself, and we hope you enjoy this.
Like what we read, we might read it in the whatever episode.
Again, this is nothing too serious. This is something that we've been liking to do for fun. And
yeah, so don't be too mean. Nobody's paying us to entertain you.
Yes. Anyway, have a good night, everyone, and stay safe out there, and we'll hope to see you again next time.
Bye.
Bye. They never stopped in a junkie's night.